Election coverage on KXCV KRNW is brought to you by Willow and Elm in downtown Maryville. With the holiday season in full swing, Willow and Elm has a wide selection of women's apparel and gifts for everyone on the list. More in store or online at shopwillowandelm.com.
You're listening to KXCV KRNW. I'm Jeremy Werner, and you're tuned into your morning conversation. And joining me, as she has for pretty much the entire election cycle, is Dr. Jessica Gracie. She teaches politics, history at Northwest Missouri State University. And this is, I guess you could say, kind of last one. We know who won. And I guess, first off, what is your takeaway after Tuesday night's results?
Yeah, I mean, I think what I kind of take away is that the economy just really, I mean, we already know this, the economy is really important to voters. It's always their number one top issue. And I think that's sort of what we saw from the exit polls. We know when the economy isn't great, as a lot of people in the exit polls think that it isn't, then, you know, that means that they're going to sort of punish the sitting president, or at least the sitting president's party, right? Harris isn't the sitting president, but she's of the same party. And so we kind of tend to punish that party when the economy isn't good.
It kind of, and oddly enough, I think it was James Carville who said it's the economy stupid, and his gut said yep. Harris, but
I mean, I think that in many ways he was right, except that because all the economic indicators that we would traditionally look at would indicate that the economy is good, but I think I've mentioned this before, it doesn't feel good to a lot of Americans, right? Because we just came off of this period of high inflation. The prices have not deflated. It's not inflating anymore, but that doesn't mean that, you know, we're paying less money for things, and it's not like we've all gotten raises. So it feels like the economy's not good, even though all those sort of economic indicators we traditionally look at would say it is. But if it doesn't feel good to voters, then that's what's probably going to matter the most.
So I think it was very early on Tuesday night that NPR and others were kind of noticing there was not as much turnout for her in the counties that Biden won in 2020. Mm-hmm. And when you, I mean, we're still tabulating votes, but it does look like we're going to be about around 10 million less voters than 2020, which was a historically high year. Right. Why is it that so many Americans didn't vote, or is it just something as simple as we had 10 million people die the last past 4 years? Not to be gruesome, but you know, as simple as that.
I don't think it's that. We generally have just an increasing population year over year. But I mean, 2020 was such a historic turnout year. It's kind of hard to beat historically high turnout, right? So I mean, we still have very high turnout. It's pretty similar to 2020, just a little bit less. In some states, especially those swing states, I actually saw that it was a little bit higher than it was in 2020. But yeah, I mean, beating a historic turnout year is just going to be hard when you have like 65% turnout. I don't know that America is going to get much higher than that. I would love to see 100% turnout. It's just not going to happen. And I think 65% is, you know, maybe our plateau.
Okay. The thing that also stuck out was rural voters coming out in force, suburban voters kind of falling back to 2016 numbers. What do you think was the biggest impact that kind of led back to those 2016 numbers, where people were like, you know, I do have this option, but I'm going to Trump?
Yeah, I think there's a whole lot of factors that go into, you know, whether people vote and then who they vote for. And I think it's very hard to sort of figure out and predict who's going to vote, but then also who they're going to vote for. And so I think for a lot of voters just in general, right, economics is the most important thing. And so I think for a lot of those voters, I think the exit poll said 68% of voters said that the economy was, you know, not good or poor. And 70% of those voters voted for Trump. And so I think that was probably a big primary driver for especially rural voters. I mean, living in a rural area, we know we're kind of hit by a lot of bad economic things hardest. You know, we don't kind of have a lot around us to kind of help us bounce back as easily as urban areas.
And looking at some of the, I guess, groups that traditionally vote Democrat, and, you know, I don't want this to kind of just be all about why Harris lost it, because I do think in a lot of ways Bernie Sanders has been saying that, at least for the past 8 years, that Democrats just don't represent working class people anymore. Is that what we're seeing in the numbers?
I don't think so. Mostly because when you look at sort of income level and how different income levels voted, it's pretty much the same. There really aren't any significant differences between different income levels and how they voted. So it's not that I don't think the Democrats have turned their back on the working class. I think as much as I think Bernie Sanders is right about a lot of things, oftentimes I think he sort of ignores the interaction between economics and working class and race as well. And so I think that that was also a big driver. And I don't necessarily think that that income level was. I think view of how the economy is a driver, but that impacts pretty much every income level. And I don't think that it's necessarily just the working class that turned their backs on the Democrats.
So one of the interesting things that I haven't heard too much about this week or during this week, because a lot of it is kind of just people doing an autopsy on the Harris campaign and trying to figure out. The thing that's interesting, I think, moving forward is that a lot of polling from this past year showed that both Democrats and Republicans were very interested in Trump's trials. Mm-hmm. Well, obviously, the January 6th one at the federal level is going away. The classified documents being stored in his bathroom are going away. Mm-hmm. But the one in Georgia is not going away. And that kind of relates to the one at the federal level as well. How is that going to play out over the next few years? Because he can't do anything about it.
Yeah, I'm not really sure. It will be really interesting because this is not something we've sort of ever seen before with a sitting president sort of facing some of these legal troubles. I really have no idea. We're kind of in unprecedented times, as it seems like we always are lately.
Well, and this goes back to federalism in a lot of ways, and at least since, and I can't remember the nitty-gritty details as much as I do during the Obama years, during Clinton and Bush, but under Clinton and Bush, it seemed like there was a lot more kind of less butting of heads between the federal government and states during that. I could be totally wrong, but that's just my own kind of view. But are we going to see more of that going forward? Because we have seen it under Obama. We saw it under Trump. We saw it under Biden. And we're probably going to see it again.
Yes. So I study state and local politics as well. And we kind of, in our current era, in sort of the post-Obama and post-Obama era, we've sort of seen less consistency from the parties and sort of where they stand on who should have sort of the rights over certain types of issues, whether it should be the states or the federal government. Before Obama, it was pretty partisan and ideologically consistent that we should, you know, this Republicans would say that the states should control most things, and the Democrats would say that the federal government should control most things. Now it really depends on what the issue is. And so if Republicans like what the federal government is doing on an issue, they're going to prefer the federal government to have control. And if Democrats like what the states are doing on a certain issue, they're going to want the states to have control. So it's not really that ideologically consistent anymore. It really is all just about what the specific issue is.
Why is that?
So, I mean, I think because the parties have become so polarized on these sort of issues rather than necessarily polarized on the role of the federal government versus the state governments. That sort of used to be the big dividing line, right? You would hear people say, right, Democrats are the party of big government and big federal government, and Republicans are the party of states' rights. And that's kind of not as true anymore, mostly because the parties have just become so much about the specific issues and not about the role of government necessarily. It's more about these culture war type issues. And that doesn't necessarily lend itself to sort of consistency about what the federal government should do or what the state government should do.
And, you know, as you know, history repeats itself. I'm sure you've told several students that a lot. Are we just going to see what happened from 2016 to 2020 over again, where Republicans are basically in charge of everything for 2 years, only get a tax cut plan passed, and kind of focus more on just executive branch powers, and then, you know, 2026, Democrats take back some control?
I think there will be a lot of similarities. I think it will be a little bit different because, you know, Trump was very new to politics when he took office in 2017 and sort of didn't really know how to effectively push policy through Congress or effectively create policy. He has some experience now, and so he might be able to get more done now in those first, you know, that first year or first couple years. But yeah, I mean, generally speaking, the party of the sitting president is going to lose seats in the midterm elections. And so the House will, we still don't know if it's going to be controlled by Democrats or not, but they will probably gain seats either way in 2026. I haven't looked at what Senate seats are up for election in 2026. And so that often determines sort of whether or not Democrats would have the opportunity to flip it or not. But generally speaking, we see the president's party lose seats in the midterm elections, and I would imagine that would be the same. It's very rarely different.
And so 2028, as it stands now, Trump terms out.
Mm-hmm.
In a lot of ways, we're back to 2016, which is both parties kind of coming in with who's going to be the leader. Because, I mean, right now, you could make the argument that if the Democrats don't secure anything at the federal level, it goes to the state level. And so then you have either Colorado Governor Jared Polis, who is currently, I think, the head of the governor's group. I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head right now. And then Governor Gavin Newsom, who just announced yesterday that he's calling a special session to shore up funds to fight the federal government. Who's leading the party in 2028 in this probably highly... don't place any bets on it, crystal ball.
I don't know. I think we will see a lot of candidates running for the nomination, just like we did in 2020, when there sort of isn't that like clear front runner like there was in 2016. You know, there were a few people that ran, but it was pretty much, you know, everybody knew it was going to be Hillary Clinton. And so there really isn't that sort of clear front runner yet. And I don't know that that person will emerge before the nomination fight in 2028. So I think we'll probably have, you know, like 20 people running for the nomination again. And then it really depends on who's able to raise the most money before sort of the Iowa caucuses, before things really get started, and who's able to sort of secure enough endorsements. But I think a lot of sort of the political elites in the Democratic Party will be sort of stingy with those endorsements. So it will be hard for us to sort of identify a front runner, I think.
And I hate to ask this question, but how much does Clinton and Harris losing impact the ability of a woman or person of color running to become the candidate of a party?
Yeah, I think it hurts it a lot. I think that a lot of people will take away from this election that a woman cannot win the presidency. And I think that's the wrong message to take. I think that is still the message people are going to take away from this. But tons of political science research shows that women are not disadvantaged in elections. Similarly situated women win at exactly the same rates as similarly situated men who run. So women win at exactly the same rates as men. Now, obviously, the presidential race could be different, right? So maybe, sure, we do see some potential disadvantages running as a woman. I don't think that that's the reason why she lost, and I don't think that's the reason why Hillary Clinton lost. But I think Democrats are probably going to want to nominate, or probably going to nominate, probably a white man for 2028. I think they'll be hesitant to nominate a woman or a person of color.
Could it be like 2020 all over again, where we're just going to look for the white guy that is potentially most popular?
Yes, exactly.
Okay. Because I did mention Governor Newsom earlier, and he, if people don't know, during the past few years has kind of gone on Republican turf to do debates and attack, and he's, I believe he's termed out in 2026, which gives him that two-year gap to potentially do his next thing. Who do you see, because we haven't really, the thing we learned in 2023 was that this is the party of Trump now. I don't know if you can really call it the Republican Party, because that would imply that other politicians in it have a chance that aren't attached to Trump. So what happens when either A, he's termed out, or, you know, God forbid, I guess, something happens to him in the White House, you know, either his own personal mm-hmm. health declining or whatever, who's going to take up the mantle, because it is kind of all about him.
Yeah, I think that the Republican Party is going to have a really tricky time sort of figuring out who that person is or what their identity is sort of after Trump, because I don't think that there is anyone in the party that sort of has the charisma that Trump has to sort of pull and inspire voters the way that he has. And so, yeah, who is that? I have no idea, because there really isn't anyone currently that could. I think J.D. Vance certainly hopes that he would be that person, but I don't think he's liked enough by a lot of Republicans for him to be that person. And so who else is it? And I have no idea. And I think the Republican Party will probably be trying to think about that throughout this term, because they're going to have to figure out someone to run for 2028. Obviously, that's not Trump. And so who is that person? I don't know.
And how much does their belief structure change when that happens? Do they continue along this? Because MAGA policies aren't fully very historically Republican. They are kind of a little bit liberal in ways in terms of spending.
Yeah.
Offering massive tax cuts while still, you know, keeping several entitlement programs in place. Because Trump did not do anything to take away Social Security from anybody during his last time.
Right.
And in a lot of ways, kind of increased entitlements for farmers during tough times and other stuff. So does the Republican Party continue down kind of that MAGA path, or does it kind of revert a little bit back to its center of Reaganism?
I think probably a mix or something new that I haven't even thought of yet. I don't know. But I think that they kind of can't go back towards those sort of Reaganish policies. I just think that time has kind of passed. But I also don't think that there's anyone that can sort of carry that like MAGA-ness the way that Trump has. And so I think there's going to be a lot of people in the party who are sort of more pure conservatives that are turned off by Trump that will want to pull the party more towards those kind of roots. I don't think they're going to be fully successful. So I think we'll kind of see this weird mashup in between.
Okay. And then final thing, when we talked last week, you predicted several things. I'll congratulate you on the half prediction of who would win.
Yep.
Because you predicted Trump would not win the popular vote. And, you know, for the first time in 20 years, he's mm-hmm. the Republican who did. But the thing you talked about when I asked, you know, what does the future of the Democratic Party hold now that it loses? You said it's kind of going to be a shift back to the center. Do you still see that happening?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think especially with what the exit polls are showing for the way that especially men voted, especially white men, I think that, and especially white women too, I think that Democrats will want to shift more towards the right to be able to capture some of those voters. And so I think that the sort of shift to include a lot of marginalized identities, I think they still won't turn their backs on those marginalized identities. I think they'll just talk a lot less about race and a lot less about queer politics and a lot less about some of those other types of issues, and probably focus a lot more on economics and, yeah, probably shift more towards even more moderate than they are now.
And I guess a follow-up to that before we wrap things up. We haven't talked immigration, and I do feel like that's kind of a big piece of it, because yeah. It was in the top three of a lot of exit polling, and do we see Democrats trying to figure out a strategy behind that as well?
Yeah, I think Democrats won't want to fully change their position on immigration, mostly because of the way that they do have support from different demographic groups that do have that sort of more liberal position on immigration. But I think the fact that, you know, they lost the Latino male vote might indicate to them that immigration is not necessarily sort of the winning issue for them, or at least their position on immigration isn't the winning issue for them. And so I don't necessarily think that they're going to take a more hard line stance on immigration, but I think they might move away sort of from more liberal policies about immigration and maybe sort of speaking a little bit more about, you know, rather than this path towards citizenship for people who came here illegally, I think they'll just kind of not talk about that as much.
Okay. Well, thank you for joining me this week. Thank you for joining me throughout the entire election cycle. I guess we've in a lot of ways, we've come to the next roller coaster, and we're going to hop on the next one. So yep. Thank you.
Of course.
Again, Dr. Jessica Gracie, teacher of politics and history here at Northwest Missouri State University. I'm Jeremy Warner, and you've been listening to your morning conversation here on KXCV KRNW.